This is Jerry DiPiano from Phem Pharma, and you are tuned in to the Love MiaVita podcast. My guest and our Scientific Advisory Council member is here with me today, Dr. Juliana Hauser. So, for those of you that have not had the pleasure to learn more about Dr. Hauser, let me share some information about her background. Dr. Hauser leads conversations about relationships, agency, sexuality, intimacy, and so much more. She has quite a CV. She studied and received her PhD in counseling education from the College of William and Mary, and she is considered a thought leader, a sexpert. And more importantly, she is diving into the hard-to-have conversations that we all need to be having. But I can assure you that after working with Dr. Juliana, she is very approachable. She's a lot of fun, and she brings both her wisdom, but also her humor to the business of counseling and working with couples. The jewel of Dr. Juliana's offering is the Revealed course, and she also certifies others to conduct these courses in 8 countries. You can learn more about Dr. J by checking out her website, dr-juliana.com. And we'll post that again so you don't have to write this down. Dr. Juliana Hauser, welcome once again to the Phem Pharma MiaVita podcast.
Thank you so much. I always look forward to it, Jerry.
Yes, we always have a lot of fun. So today's podcast is about evolving relationships. Not revolving, although it could be revolving, but evolving, how things may change and how you may want to rewrite your relationship rules. So it's kind of a cool topic. So what is an evolving relationship?
Yeah, and I love it. I love the topics that you're interested in letting us go to. So thank you for letting this topic have a format too, and a platform. So the way that I really go about all of my counseling, if I was to say really what my theoretic orientation is, it's agency. It is that I really like helping people figure out what they want and what they need on their own terms, and then why. And then after we figure those out, then let's put it into action. And that goes for how couples decide to have their relationship. And in particular, what we're talking about today is monogamy versus having a relationship that you invite other people into your commitment or into your sexual activity. It's been called several different things. You can call it an open marriage. You can call it ethical non-monogamy or consensual. Non-monogamy, it can there's a whole range of things that fit underneath what I like calling evolving. And I like using that term as opposed to alternative or conventional, because I think we should all have the space when it is consensual and transparent for couples to be able to decide what works for them. And it's no one else's business. And there needs to be no judgment as to what that means. And for me, what we're talking about is if you are in a committed relationship, a committed partnership with one other person, and one or both of you is interested in pursuing bringing other people in.
So when we talk about a committed relationship, this is not necessarily just, it's not marriage, it could be partnership that has been established for a number of years between two consenting adults, and things may change because one partner is wanting to explore his or her sexuality in different ways. And so the idea of the ethical non-monogamy, I like the word ethical. What is your definition of ethical non-monogamy? That kind of caught my eye.
Transparent and consensual, and an agency.
So let's talk about agency within a relationship, because not everyone that is listening in or watching this is going to understand the concept of agency. I know we hear a lot about it in various ways, but let's talk about agency in the context of a relationship.
So what I mean by that is that we A lot of a growing belief and philosophy is that we, after especially after COVID and the pandemic, is that what people are asking, why are we doing this? But just because it has always been done this way doesn't mean that we have to keep doing this way. And so I think in general, we are having a global rise in agency because we're asking, do I want this? Do I not want this? That's just kind of the baseline of what agency is about. And we were doing that in the context of a relationship. There are a lot of people who question the institution of marriage. If does it work? What is the reason for it? Do we need it anymore? Do we need to have a piece of paper that has that makes it legal? Do we need a ceremony that makes it public? Do we need anything beyond deciding that we care about each other in this way? And you know, there's thoughts about, you know, the statistics of divorce. There's thoughts on the statistics of cheating. And I think we have also a very big tell that Esther Perel, if you know, the therapist and popular thought leader, Esther Perel, she became popular off of a book called Mating into Captivity. And she has a great TED Talk, is resonating with a lot of people. And what she's speaking about is, yeah, maybe we're really not meant to be monogamous, or here's an explanation to not make it a pathological problem that you may feel multiple attractions across your lifespan to the same person. She always says she's been married, I think, 5 times to the same man. Like, she'll talk about that, you know, being a part of the evolution of her relationship with one person. But, you know, that once you commit to one person, it doesn't necessarily cut off your interest, your belief in your attraction to somebody else. And sometimes your interest in somebody else or other people is a symptom to the relation, the primary relationship not working. And sometimes it may be you just have the ability to feel attracted and drawn and connected to multiple people, either at once or kind of in a consecutive way outside of just one relationship. I think that resonates with a lot of people. So if you're in agency, if you're thinking of agency, it doesn't mean, oh, you have to do that. It means you are deciding, do I believe in monogamy? Is it what I believe in? Is it what I want? And if the answer is yes, wonderful, then that is what you do. And if marriage and ceremonies are important to you and what you would consent to because you've actively, with purpose and intention, thought it through, beautiful. It also means there will be some people who have the right to say, not me. That doesn't work for me. And it never has worked for me. And I can't keep putting myself into a way that society has made it or religion has made it be so. My belief with agency is that everyone gets to have a right to all of that. All I'm asking is, let's do that with purpose and intention. Let's have a purpose and an intention of how we are asking these questions, and don't just do things because that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, so the conventional wisdom is not necessarily something that we ought to subscribe to. We should really be the owners of our own destiny and make choices and have the consequences of those choices be our own and not manufactured because of some conventional wisdom that says we have to be, if we're in a relationship, it has to be with one person in a committed relationship. I guess that's the concept of agency in a relationship.
Mm-hmm. You decide for yourselves what works for you and what doesn't work for you because you thought it through.
And is there, I'm curious, have we seen a particular demographic that seems to be more attracted to evolving relationships than another demographic, a different age group cohort, men, women? What are the demographics, if we know that information?
I'll speak to it from my practice, which obviously is a self-selected group, but I feel fortunate that I get to work with people in multiple countries and virtually. So I feel like I see a pretty good slice of what's going on. In my practice, mainly what I'm seeing is people in more urban areas are seeking support in the decision to open up their relationship or not, or to seek therapy in already established relationships. So for instance, I worked with a couple and they, after they vetted me for making sure I knew what I was talking about and was a safe therapist to speak about this relationship, he was married. I was not seeing he and his wife. I was seeing he and his girlfriend. And so he considered his wife his primary relationship. And he considered the woman that he was doing therapy with me with was his primary girlfriend. Now, both of them had what they call playmates beyond that. They weren't monogamous to each other also. And the primary relationship, the wife and the girlfriend, did not have a whole lot of interaction and they weren't sexual with each other. It was true relationships. And what we talked about was what you would talk about with any other kind of therapy relationship issue. Demographic-wise, I would say, they're definitely, for those who work with me, it is people who are younger than 35. That's in general where I'm seeing it being something that's already established when they seek me out for support. When they are looking at the possibility of moving from a committed marriage to opening it up, and they're wanting to help make the decision of how do we do this in a healthy way and decide this is really right for us, that is more 35 to the 50 zone. And of course, there's always outliers, but that's the trend that I see. And it's what also seems interesting in that is for those that are in the younger aspect of that, they're already, it's already happening. The decision's already been made. It's actually quite normalized for them already. They don't need support in how to tell people about it, how to even begin the process. They need support in just the complexity of handling multiple feelings, multiple relationships, and in deciding how to keep with the ethical aspect of it, because it requires a high level of communication. So to maintain that and to maintain that those series of relationships in a healthy way, you often need someone to help you keep being introspective.
I can imagine it could get pretty complicated, and use the word transparency early on and communicating with all of the parties that are involved in the relationships is, I would imagine, that is sacrosanct, because we don't want to feel that one party is disadvantaged or feels blindsided and assumes the relationship is something other than what it is, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So we talk about, you talk about different kinds of relationships. An open relationship, we've heard words like polyamorous relationships. You talk about swinging and partner swapping. So let's talk about the various types of ethical non-monogamous relationships.
And there seems to almost be a limitless option of variability of what that could look like, which I think is great. You know, again, it goes back to agency, but in general, things usually kind of fall into some bigger categories. One is that you are interested in having being a part of a community where, in general, you all believe that in general, people are believing that they don't want to have just one primary partner for their lifespan or for their relationship span. It doesn't mean that throughout this original primary relationship that they will always have somebody else, but that's part of the belief system. That is part of what, just like in a relationship that you're going to be monogamous, that's just part of it. They know that that's an agreement. It's an agreement as long as things are staying the same, that you're going to have multiple people. For some people in ethical non-monogamy, it means that they are polyamorous, or it means that what they've decided to do is and to have relationships that aren't necessarily romantic or emotionally intimate, but they're more sexual in nature. Now, there are some people that I meet and talk with that they switch the meaning of those words. So some will use that definition and say that it's polyamory, and ethical non-monogamy is more of the community aspect. And I think in some ways, because this hasn't become something that people can talk about very openly and feel safe about it, we're still figuring out words for it. But in essence, there's lots of options of how that can look. It can be emotional relationships. It can be physical relationships, it can be romantic, and it can be sexual. Those relationships can be that it's the whole, there's a three, they call them like a truple. So it's three people in a couple. It could be that a couple dates another couple. It could be that in the couple relationship that they go off and have other relationships or just other sexual encounters. That can happen separately, or that can happen in a threesome or in a foursome. There's lots of variability with that. And then it can be that it's just sexual, you're just opening up to sexual relationships. And that's what it would fall under, what we've heard a lot more frequently is people are swinging or people are partner swapping. And then I would say kind of the layer underneath all of that too is experiencing like a sex club, experiencing a kink club where you're going to an establishment, you're going to an event where that is part of the option for you, but it isn't necessarily about establishing a relationship or seeking it out through an app, like a dating app for an open relationship, but it's an establishment that provides the scenario for it.
So it sounds like for those younger folks, when we get getting back to the demographic, it sounds like for those individuals that are in their 20s, maybe into their early 30s, this is something that they are choosing before they actually enter into a monogamous relationship, or at least they've contemplated what this may look like more so than a more mature audience, which is kind of interesting to me, because I would think that if you're in a more mature relationship, you know, before you reach the point where you can no longer engage in a relationship, which is pretty much, you know, at the end of life, right? So we're all having sex until we are very old, at least, you know, that's what I understand. But you may want to say, you know what, I've lived most of my life in this monogamous relationship, but before I reach the point where I can't, I want to try this. So do you get that from this audience?
And again, I don't want to pigeonhole I was just kind of saying trends too. And I've seen it all. And I know there's even more beyond what I've seen in my practice. That's just a self-selected group that works with me. But I've seen people that are in longer term relationships that are like, I've heard about this, or like, I feel drawn to this, or I saw her TED talk. Or I heard, you know, someone else is talking about this, and it has felt like something I wasn't ever allowed to pursue, but I feel drawn to it. Those are the conversations that make me feel like there's a chance of this being done in agency. I'll tell you what it isn't, and where I feel like, uh-oh, when I hear that opening a relationship is the answer, like the antithesis of monogamy. It's not. If you think that this is going to answer you being unfaithfulness or it's not going to allow you to cheat, that is the wrong reason to get into this. It's also the wrong reason if you're doing this to fix your relationship. If there is something wrong, if there is something that feels broken and disconnected and unfulfilling, then opening up your relationship is not going to be the fix for it. It's the kind of a similar mindset of having a kid isn't going to fix a relationship. You are just adding a whole lot more to the elements with less skill level and bandwidth to handle it. So I always look for the relationship to be in a healthy place and look for the reasons why someone is curious and interested in it. And that interest and curiosity can be at any age and at any stage of a relationship. But what I see different, and this is just in general, there's certainly many, many people out that fall outside of this. But in general, the difference I see is in a younger generation, this doesn't seem like anything you would ever call alternative. But in the older generation, then it is something that we still consider not mainstream. And so that's why it feels different. And that's why, to me, the vernacular is different and why they're seeking help in a different way from me.
So way back when, some of our listeners probably remember it, but there used to be the thing called the orgy. So yes. That was a version of it. Ethical non-monogamous relationship. We won't go there though. By the way, I don't have any personal experiences. My husband's probably going to listen to this podcast, my family members and friends too. So I just want you all to know, I have not had any personal experience. I'm learning for the first time. So this is a really important topic though, and it's a very interesting topic. So let's imagine that you have chosen to go down this path. You have a partner, and now you want to evolve this relationship. Where do you start?
I like starting with really doing your own self-exploration first. It starts obviously with a twinge of interest. If you have, it's usually pretty guttural. People are like, nope, absolutely not. I would never do that. Why would people do that? I can never handle it. And people will say that to me all the time when they know that this is a part of my practice. They'll give me their opinion of the yes or no. If it's a no, then you just, then you don't need to worry about it. It's not going to be something that you even consider. If there is like a interesting, I would like to know more, then that's what you do. And you look at, there's a kind of a series of questions that I put into the blog that I would go through. That's really getting clear as to what your motives are, why you may have an interest in this, what your goals would be in opening up this marriage. And if you have any vulnerabilities in this relationship that would be of concern that you would want to address before you went in and added this to your relationship.
So you mentioned the health of a relationship, and you also mentioned safety. And these are important considerations because you said this early on. What is the health of the relationship? You're not trying to fix anything by evolving the relationship. And secondarily, you have to feel safe in the relationship and safe in your ability to communicate with this other person, whether they are a spouse or a committed partner. Maybe we can dive into that a little bit, because to me, that would be a really important place to start before you launch into, I want an evolving relationship. And when you're not safe and you feel that the other person might not react quite the way you expect.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you've never spoken about it, or if you've never seen your partner's reaction to the concept of it, which is really what I would actually offer first, is there a movie? Is there an article? Is there a conversation? Is there something that that you've seen, just a guttural reaction from your partner, so you even know what the starting point is? And if not, then you need to have a relationship that you feel safe enough to be vulnerable, that you feel that, and it, obviously we mean safe emotionally and physically, but I also mean safe in the repair of being able to say, I feel curious about this. I'm not telling you we're doing it. I'm not telling you we've already done it. I'd like to invite you into the decision with me. But it's something that's important for us to have this discussion. And there are some relationships where even that phrasing would feel really threatening and scary, and that person would interpret it differently, wouldn't partner with them, would shame them. And that's not a relationship where even opening up would be an option. So you want to make sure that that is something that your relationship is already established and practiced, and that it's something that you all can recover from, because there are many people who have broached their partner and it ends up not being a yes. And you want your relationship to be okay on the other side of that, no matter whether it's agreed upon or you're not agreed upon. And so to be safe is an important part of that. To have honest communication is a really important part of that. And to be honest and vulnerable, you have to feel safety as a part of that too.
So that was going to be my next question. So let's assume that you open up the dialogue. You think you've got this healthy relationship with your partner, and you had seen a movie, maybe you read something in a book or an article, whatever, and you broach the subject with this partner that you think is going to be open, receptive, what have you, and they shoot you down immediately. And I don't mean literally, God forbid, but they're like, they put out the time, they put the time up, the timeout sign. It's like, nope, we're not going there. Nope, we're not going to talk about this particular issue. And then they think there's something wrong with you because perhaps their thinking is more conventional. So I always call that the hereafter conversation, which is, if you're not hereafter what I'm hereafter, then maybe you will be hereafter I'm gone. Mm. And that can be kind of scary too. So I think you touched on this, which is you have to understand that the relationship may still remain intact, mm-hmm, if the other party isn't amenable to this kind of evolving relationship. What do you do at that point? So you just, they told you, no, 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 we're not going and doing that. Then what?
Well, my preference in a healthy relationship is that if the person who is receiving the proposal is a no, that it wouldn't feel so absolute, it wouldn't feel so shut down and shaming, and that it wouldn't have this huge, you know, rip in the relationship. That would actually, again, be the sign that this wasn't ever going to work. But there are ways to say no and no thank you and to have agency in the relationship that's still relational. And there's a way to say no to this that doesn't shut down and damage the relationship, just like there's a way to ask for it. And what you're hoping for is that this relationship has had quite a bit of practice already, inside and outside of conversations where there is something sexual in nature, and that you know how to say no to each other. You know how to accept no's, you know how to talk through no's as well as yeses. And so if it's a no that is, oh, like what, kind of like, it's the same conversation if you're talking about sharing a fantasy with somebody or wanting to do a different sex act and your person shoots you down. That is inherently a problem of the relationship, not the ask. The ask isn't the problem. If the motivation and the intent is pure and there's a reason for it, the process of negotiating a yes or a no is really the telltale sign that I look for in saying, yeah, this makes sense or this doesn't make sense. So I would step back and like, how do we negotiate things? And there are times that there's someone proposes it, the other partner says no, and even if it's done in the best of and healthiest of ways, they realize, but it is a part of me. It is something that I need, and I respect if that's not what you need and what you want, and the relationship ends or completes itself. And then there's times that it's like, yeah, okay, I'll try it. We can handle this if we try this. Like I said before, like it's a no thank you bite. We'll try it. We'll see. And then if we don't like it, we say no to it. And we go back to how things were. And now we've tried it. I've seen all of those scenarios occur.
And I believe you touched on something that's kind of interesting, which is that perhaps if this is an unwilling partner, that's they're not willing to consider it at all. In any way, shape, or form, perhaps you have to exercise your own agency. You need to make the decision for yourself that this is really something that you want and need. Then perhaps you have to revisit whether the relationship that you're in is the right relationship. Does that seem to make sense or not?
Again, if you've done a lot of the self-awareness work, if you've really understood your reasons why you're interested in this and what you think the benefits would be, and if you can clearly understand the challenges that you're, if you have a 360 view of this topic, and it feels gutturally correct as to something that you want and need to do, and your partner does not have the same feelings, then yeah, sometimes that means that the relationship is over, and then you all need to move into new places. And I think, one thing that I haven't talked about is not feeling pressured to say yes, because you can tell this is something that your partner really wants. You can't say yes. Well, you can. I don't want in a healthy relationship and in a relationship and agency for anyone to feel like they don't have the room to say no because their person will leave them or their person will cheat on them. And so we just put a nice stamp on, say, open relationship, but it really means it's not an open relationship. It just means you're not lying about being with other people. And there's a big difference in the people who are really practicing this and really understand what these relationships are about. There's a very big difference between opening your relationship and not cheating and lying.
That's a pretty big distinction. And I personally believe that that is an important distinction, because the cheating and lying is the form of betrayal. None of us appreciates betrayal and lying, particularly in relationships where we are intimate, whether it is sexual intimacy or whether it is another form of intimacy that where we bare our souls to the other person. So I think that's a really important distinction. So let's assume that both, let's talk about the positive, right? Okay. This is kind of a cool thing. I'm game. What are the range of options for us? So you kind of figure out what the boundaries are and so forth. How do you move forward?
So first you want to be, you want to educate yourself, and you, anytime that I give a suggestion, I want them to do it individually. And then I want them to do it as a couple. So go educate yourself by yourself through chat rooms and articles and videos, and really exposing yourself as much as possible. Then you also want to find people, if you can, who are already practicing this, who are already having relationships like this, and it's been successful for them. And they're not necessarily newbies in the process. So they can really say, here are the pitfalls, here are the challenges, here are the wonderful things about it. Not to tell you how to go about it, but to tell you authentically what their journey is. Not everyone has access to, to that, but if you do, I highly recommend it. And again, talking to people individually and then talking to people as a couple. So really arm yourself with information is what I'm saying. The next thing is, you know, you talked about setting boundaries. I like talking about guidelines too, because what I have seen in the progression of working with different couples going through this is that you have to have a start. You have to have a starting point. There's just certain things you need to talk about in the sexual realm. It's how do we feel about what sex acts are okay and what are not okay? What are we going to do about safer sex practices? Some people will call it like fluid bonding. They'll be that the primary couple are the ones that they don't need to use condoms. But if you're going to have any kind of sex with somebody outside the primary relationship, that everyone has to use a condom or has to use safer sex practices as a part of it. And there's, it's absolutely trusted in that way. Or STI testing. There's lots of kind of logistic things that you want to keep track of. And then there's other things like, do you want to debrief? How much do you want to know about each other? What is it like? One couple in particular stands out that something they hadn't anticipated, which is why I call these guidelines, because your guidelines need to change as you learn more about what you're experiencing. So they had certain, they were okay with this one app. They made a decision. They both could join it. They were okay. They made a kind of a number of how much money could be spent on dates and how much time you could spend on a date away from the primary partnership. But something they hadn't considered was what it would be like to see the other person texting who they didn't know they were texting, smiling and giggling. Another couple that I was thinking about, they didn't really kind of think about the communication, how much it takes to find the right kind of partner, especially if what you're looking for are romantic relationships, not just sexual acts with somebody else. You're dating. And dating takes a long time, whether it's within a relationship or it's starting from a single place. And they felt quite jealous and resentful of how much time their partner was spending on the app and how much time that was taking away from their normal communication. And so they had to change their guidelines of how much that felt in that way. And some of these things, I put them in the blog, and there's other things you can find out. There's some really good articles out there also. But some of it, you just have to, once you're in it, you have to figure out what is being tweaked for each other in this relationship. And some of that isn't predictable either. Most people will talk about, they just already know they'll be a jealous person and it doesn't work for them, or they have to figure out jealousy, or they already know that this is going to be very exciting and they're thrilled to hear about their partner. And you may predict that correctly or you may be incorrect, but there will always be things that you didn't foresee happening. For instance, I had a couple that one had, I mean, just couldn't walk out the door without someone wanting to go out on a date with them. And the other person had 4 months of absolutely a dry spell, and it was not who they would have predicted. So it felt really awful for them in this. They started feeling this, like, I'm not wanted. I'm not lovable. Wow, my partner is really sought after and I'm not. And that's something that could have never been foreseen.
And I'm guessing that there could be that concern around forming an emotional attachment with someone that you meet through these evolving relationships that might feel better, right? Might be a better fit, to use that word, fit, than this monogamous, what you thought was this relationship, this committed relationship that you had. So I'll call it your primary partner. So I can imagine that all of this, there's a lot of navigation that needs to go on in terms of understanding how that will feel to the other party, if there is an emotional attachment that's formed, and what that means to the, I guess we could call it the primary relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So real complexity here in these evolving relationships, but it could potentially spice up your life, and it could make your life richer and more enjoyable. And let's face it, we talk about pleasure, and I know one of the things that we discuss and have discussed in these podcasts and in other places is that we are entitled to feel pleasure, and that can take a variety of different turns. So it can be physical pleasure, it can be emotional pleasure, it can be the pleasure of pleasure of someone who is intellectually curious. So lots of different ways to experience pleasure. Doesn't necessarily have to mean sex, although I think we're talking about evolving relationships. We're probably talking more about the sexual relationships that are evolving.
Yeah, in general, most of them do involve some kind of sexual component, but I certainly have worked with people that it wasn't. And it's interesting. So I'll tell you some of the things that I've heard from my clients as to why they think it's a benefit to them and why they felt drawn to it in the first place. One is that there's a difference between polygamy and polyamory. And sometimes those get mixed up also. But in those who really identify with polyamory is that they believe that they can be in love with more than one person at the same time. And when they are only having in love with one person, there's a part of them that feels unfulfilled. It's not that the relationship is broken. It's not that there's anything wrong with the partnership itself. This person's wonderful. But as a part of them, they feel that there's more that they want to give and connect and explore. And for those that statement doesn't resonate, then this doesn't resonate with you. And that is okay. But there will be people who hear that. They're like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And it's just fascinating. You know, again, humans are just really different, and we have different needs for connection and love and intimacy and relationships. And so that's a very common thing that I hear, is that they feel more fulfilled as a person by being able to explore love feelings and connection with multiple people, especially at once. And also that brings on a lot of challenges, but most people, and the ones that I've really worked with that this has been successful and fulfilling for them, is that they love complexities. They love the experience of being challenged to know who they are, because you will not navigate this in a healthy, fulfilling way if you don't know who you are. And the process of being in it, I've seen it just absolutely show people their edges, show places of themselves that they would have never seen had they been in one relationship for a very long period of time. There are other people that is, again, just the exact opposite, that being with one person is what shows them their edges. And if they had multiple people, they would never see this part. So again, I want to give a plug for all sides of the continuum in this, because I've seen people feel quite threatened by the thought of someone else experiencing expansion in a way that they can't relate to. And that's where I always get worried about people trumping on each other's agency. If it's something that doesn't make sense to you, that's where it ends. It just doesn't make sense to you. It doesn't make it wrong for the other people and other persons that it's for. But going back to the benefits, I've also seen that, you know, in that concept that the primary relationship doesn't have anything wrong with it, and that they are very committed and want to be with that person. But there are parts to that relationship that will never be fulfilled because of the limits of the personalities, the limits of the connection, the commonalities or differences, but that bringing someone else into either that relationship or bringing it into your life can fulfill those needs. And that by having those needs fulfilled, it actually strengthens their commitment to that primary person. And that people feel much better about themselves, having that fulfillment being transparent and consensual, as opposed to it being, like what you said, the betrayal, the behind the scenes thing. And if it's not viewed as it being something that needs to be fixed, but an expansion. So I would use the word evolving, and I would use the word expansion. And again, for some people, they're gonna be like, nope, that means it's broken. Okay, that's okay. That's certainly one way of looking at things. But there are other people who look at it that the expansion actually makes it a much more integral relationship. So I've seen that be something that's really wonderful. And then the last thing that, I mean, there's more benefits to this, but just in general, what I see people talking about is that the the sexual variety and novelty is very interesting, and it keeps a vibrancy in their soul that the vibrancy can carries forth to the primary relationship or the other relationships, not necessarily the sexual acts, but the vibrancy that it creates in them. If the relationship is beyond just sexual acts, that it's romantic and intellectual and emotional, that it exposes you to other parts in a more intimate way that is sanctioned and expansive and evolving, rather than like, I can't tell you that I had this wonderful conversation with somebody because it's going to look inappropriate that we talked like this with each other. So that you are constantly being exposed to other kinds of people who have other kinds of interests, especially the older you are. So when you're meeting more interesting people who've had more interesting lives, and you get to have the boundary of we can't talk like this is removed, then you get to learn more. So people really talk about that being a positive in this kind of relationship.
So there's a lot to unpack in these evolving relationships, and quite a bit of information that one can glean from the podcast, but even more so, if you would like to learn more, if you'd like to look at this in a more detailed way, you will find a transcribed version of this podcast with additional information on the FemPharma website and the blog on evolving relationships. And Dr. Juliana will also have additional information to share on her website, dr-juliana.com. So a very interesting conversation for sure. Can't say that, you know, I have had any experience in this area, but it is definitely a curiosity to lots of folks that may be listening or watching this podcast. So I encourage you to take a second look reviewing the blog post. And Dr. Juliana, as always, it's a pleasure to be having these kinds of conversations that all of us need to be having, but perhaps you're too timid to ask the question or to explore this. So if you're thinking about having an evolving relationship, with more information to share with you, Dr. Juliana Hauser, thank you so much for being our guest on the Love Mia Vita podcast. And to all of those that are listening and watching, remember to love Mia Vita.